Welcome to PCMC. I'm Mike Bongiorno. I'm joined today by my dear brother, Anthony Bongiorno. How are you?
Good. Hi, everyone.
Everyone's happy to see you.
Thank you. I'm happy to be back. How are you?
I'm very good. You can hold your mic even a little. Trust that mic. Yeah, even farther, I'm saying. You put your trust in that mic.
It's gonna get I you. Always eat the mic.
It's out to get you. We're doing a fully.
Been a while. Well, actually, has it been that
we're
long?
Doing a raging hard fully. It has been it's been a minute.
Yeah. I'm just pulling up my notes here.
If you don't know, if you're a new listener, and you might be because our numbers are going up.
Ooh.
So if you're a new listener, a fully is an episode where we have three segments: news and trailers, the chill sesh where we talk about just things we're consuming, and then our obsessions or current obsessions media wise and typically they have funny names based on something someone says in the show. so Anthony, you excited about this fully?
I'm really excited about it. I love a good fully.
Yes, me too.
It's, you know, it's just there's so much going on. There's trailers. It's the original. Chilling, there's obsessions. It's a lot.
And it was really the first many episodes are fullies.
Yes.
The fully really was the original format. Because for years I wanted to do a podcast. I was like, I don't want to do it unless I know a good format. And then I came up with the format. I was like, this is pretty good.
Yeah.
And then like a year into it, I was like, ah, that's too much. I want to just do
topics.
Yeah,
what are now regular episodes were minis.
Yeah. Yeah. Which we don't call minis anymore because they can be quite long.
Yeah, they're usually longer than fullies.
Yeah. So you're ready for some news?
I'm ready. See, this is my favorite part because I don't know what the news is.
Oh, okay. Exciting. So Beetlejuice 2 is not just happening, but it's got a date. It's coming out September 6, 2024. And this week we saw photos from the set of a current day. You didn't see these?
No. I heard the casting news about America's Sweetheart playing Lydia Deetz's daughter.
Oh, you mean Miss Symmetrical Face?
Yes.
Jenna Ortega?
Miss Symmetry, Jenna Ortega, which is perfect casting.
Yes.
But no, I didn't know that they're already shooting it?
Yeah, here's Winona Ryder. Where is it? Where's the picture? This is Winona Ryder.
Whoa.
Kind of having the same hair she had in the original movie. Yeah, I don't think this might not be in the movie.
No, it looks like she's driving up to
this
set.
Camera outside. But anyway, yeah. So,
gosh, what could it be about? It's definitely not that original Hawaiian sequel, is it?
Oh, the one that
the planned sequel, the like Beetlejuice Goes Hawaiian.
Wasn't that one written by the Wayans brothers or something?
Maybe.
No, it's not that. I don't know what it is, but I don't know if it could be good.
It's Michael Keaton, right? He's also in it.
It's Michael Keaton.
Everybody's attached.
Jeffrey Jones ain't attached.
Who's attached?
Jeffrey Jones.
He is attached or is not attached?
He is not attached.
What's the deal with him? Is he a rapist?
He was found with copious amounts of child pornography. It's still a heinous crime.
Oh, yeah.
He just, as far as we know, did not do anything. unlike the fucking guy from Seventh Heaven.
Yeah, that guy.
So Jeffrey,
you ever hear the audio of that guy with his therapist?
No, it sounds like a real
bummer.
It's not bummer.
With his therapist. It's his wife recording him talking about what he talked about in therapy, I believe. And he's like, yeah, I exposed myself to many young girls. It's quite a chilling
That's
audio.
That's real terrible.
Yeah.
That's real terrible.
But anyway, so this guy had...
Jeffrey Jones?
Yeah, copious amounts of child pornography. Went to jail for how long?
I think only a year or so.
Yeah, because wasn't he in Lincoln?
He was in Lincoln after
that's
after
bold that. Of Steven Spielberg to cast
yeah, him. But he hasn't really been in much anything else, and he's not in this.
Is Otho with us on this earthly plane?
No, he died.
Yeah,
he died not that long after.
I don't know why.
He died very young.
I knew he was gone. I felt it.
No, the cast is stacked. You've got Winona Ryder, Michael Keaton, and Catherine O'Hara back.
Ooh, I forgot about her.
But now we have Willem Dafoe.
What?
Monica Bellucci.
Who's that?
You know Monica Bellucci. She's in things. She's very, very attractive, talented actress.
I've never seen that person in my life.
She's in, what do you call it? She's in Mafia Mama.
Oh, well.
No, she's been in good things. She's around.
Mafia Mama. Talk about a 30 Rock movie.
Justin Theroux.
Ooh, sexy.
Yeah, so
I wonder.
So what could this be? I don't know. It feels moot to talk about whether or not it's necessary.
It's certainly not necessary.
Right. Nothing, absolutely nothing is necessary. But is it worth, I don't know. Is it anything to be excited about?
I try to reserve all judgment until I see a trailer.
Right. Well, you know, it's also,
but trailers can also be very deceiving.
Trailers have gotten so good as an art form.
They have.
That sometimes there are great I'll remember great trailers and be like, oh yeah, I saw the movie and it was bad.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'll forget that the movie came out and it was bad.
It's almost like, let me just consider this trailer the sequel.
Yeah.
I can't believe that, was it just kept under wraps or was just nobody paying attention? That, I feel like 5 minutes ago I learned that this was happening and it's already shooting.
I think maybe it was under wraps. And it feels like we all learned about it when they announced Jenna Ortega in it.
Mm-hmm.
But her being cast might have been the last thing that happened.
And then they just...
But also she's in Wednesday, right? Which is another Tim Burton thing. So that's probably why he wanted to put her in it.
I don't like to see her pigeonholed like that, though. I don't like it.
Well, but we don't know anything. She could be the complete opposite. She could be pink and sunny and bright. She could be the total opposite of what her mother is.
Well, that would make sense if she's Lydia's daughter, that she's like that.
Yeah. So we don't know.
So remind me, it's been a few years. In the original Beetlejuice, is Catherine O'Hara supposed to be Winona Ryder's mother?
No, she's her stepmother. Because
in the musical,
said
she's her stepmother, and they make a big deal of Lydia's mother being dead.
Right. But they don't make a big deal of it in the movie, but if you listen closely, there are some lines of dialogue that indicate she is her stepmother. Oh, okay.
So it wouldn't be her biological granddaughter, because I could see it being like if she had a daughter that was kind of like
right,
mother,
right.
That would...
Right. The thing is, Beetlejuice itself shouldn't work.
Because it's the weirdest fucking concept for a movie.
It doesn't just work on a quirky level.
Genre.
Right. And it doesn't just work on a quirky level. It ended up being a big hit.
Yeah.
Despite how on paper, when it was first written, it was just this weird movie. And then Wes Craven was going to direct it.
It was going to be scarier.
Yeah.
Right?
He was going to make it more scary. And then Tim Burton was going to direct it. And he wanted, he did direct it, but he wanted
Sammy Davis Jr.
To play Beetlejuice.
So wild.
And they said, no, of course not. and so the thing is, what can the plot be? I have no idea what the plot could be.
It's so funny. Beetlejuice is one of those really weird things where, if you showed somebody Beetlejuice in a vacuum or, somebody who's, young and doesn't know anything about it, they would watch it and be like, oh, this must have been, a critical darling indie that failed miserably.
Right.
And it's no, actually, it was a huge success and spawned a Saturday morning cartoon series and a musical.
There were toys of this.
We had toys.
It was a phenomenon.
One of us, or both of us, went as Beetlejuice for Halloween.
Yeah.
It
was huge.
A huge thing.
Crazy.
Remember we had the wig with the you press the button and then the hair would come
up.
And the worms would come out of your skull.
And the figures and all that stuff.
Yeah, so crazy. And we watched the cartoon. We liked the cartoon.
Yeah, we watched a lot of the cartoon.
Yeah.
The French skeleton guy.
Yeah, oh yeah.
With the beret.
Maybe he'll be in this one.
I hope so. I feel like in the play they added some elements from the cartoon.
Oh, definitely.
Making him less villainous.
Yes.
You know, it's also odd because the movie's 70 minutes. The movie's so short.
It is. It's super
and
short.
And Dick Cavett's in it?
Yeah, it's super short. So much so that I remember when we both saw the musical and we both really liked it. And I remember seeing the musical and thinking, once act one was over, I was like, that's the movie. The musical, basically the whole movie is in act one and then it continues into act two.
Yeah, and it adds a lot more
Adds a lot more.
Yeah, and, You see in this cast list, there's no Gina Davis or...
That's upsetting.
Alec Baldwin, so I guess the Maitlands aren't a part of it.
That's really upsetting because they were like her parents at the end.
Yeah, right. So...
Well, they got the kid that they always kind of wanted.
Right. Yeah, it was... They're kind of the protagonist more than even Lydia is.
Yeah.
I had an idea for a Beetlejuice sequel once. My idea was two people die, or three people die, and for some reason they're like... They're not in a house or whatever. They're like in the sand world, and they have to like travel to heaven or hell, and they hire Beetlejuice as a tour guide, as a guide, and then shenanigans ensue.
That sounds pretty good.
My fear is that first of all, it's directed by Tim Burton, who's no longer good.
Yeah, no.
So
it's gonna look terrific.
It's gonna be not good.
But the aesthetic.
Aesthetic, as the kids would say. As the kids would miss say. So,
when they're like, that's so aesthetic.
Yeah, it's like,
please stop.
Yeah. That's like being like, did you read The Lovely Bones? That is so book.
Yeah, I know.
It's what, like, a that book.
Is, that word is a noun, sir.
It's giving me book.
Although I would say it's giving book.
Anyway. So there's that, and I guess my fear would be that it would just retread the first plot again.
It most certainly will.
And they'll have to do a musical scene, like the scene where they all sing Banana Boat Song.
Yeah, and I hope it's not something shitty, which it will be. It'll be like some shitty pop song.
Oh God, I really hope not.
Remember the
oddness in terms of juxtaposition to have the Banana Boat Song there. It just adds to the weird flavor of it. Yeah.
And then what's the song at the end? Is it the same song at the end?
No, it's
Shake, Senora.
Yeah.
Remember, you just made me think of the Universal Studios Monsters concert live.
Yeah, you bet.
And it was like Beetlejuice hosted it. He was like the MC, and it was like all the Universal Monsters dancing, singing his songs.
Fucking bet I do. He was good friends with Frankenstein.
He was really good friends with all of those guys.
All right, moving on. So, also happening, and this came out of nowhere, Hong Kong Disney is making a whole Frozen Land.
Okay.
Which is interesting for a couple reasons. One, it's going to have two Frozen attractions in it, which it seems to be how they do these things now, right? Harry Potter, I think, has two attractions.
Oh, like two main attractions.
Right. Two rides, probably one more grown up, one more kiddie, and like a store and a restaurant. Like that's maybe some kind of a thing. You know, Galaxy's Edge did this.
Uh-huh.
So it's interesting that it's premiering in Hong Kong and not an American park.
I don't really think about Hong Kong Disney. Is it big?
No. Almost outside of Disney World, all the international parks are roughly around the size of Disneyland.
Yeah, like I went
to Disneyland plus California Adventure.
Yeah, I went to Disneyland Paris, and it was like it was like Six Flags. Like it was walkable.
Right. They all tend to be small. Hong Kong, I don't know as much about as I do.
Tokyo also, right?
Tokyo is interesting because it's actually not owned by Disney. It's just licensed.
Oh, that's weird. Oh, is that why they get to do their own thing?
That's why they get to do their own thing. That's why they have a lot of their own cool merchandise.
Yeah.
There's Hong Kong and Shanghai, and trying to think of what's notable in Hong Kong. I think Hong Kong is the one. Oh man, if I get this wrong, people will be so mad. I think Hong Kong is the one where their Tomorrowland is like steampunk. Jules Verne.
No, I think that's Paris.
You remember that?
Yeah, I remember a steampunk aesthetic in Tomorrowland.
Wait, was Hong Kong the one that has Disney Sea, as in Disney, like Disneyland, Disney Sea? All right,
one of them does.
Yeah, and they have like a Journey to the Center of the Earth ride, Disney Sea. No, that's fucking Tokyo. God damn it! All right, I don't remember what's in Hong Kong, but now they're gonna have Frozen Land.
Which one has Phantom Manor?
Paris.
Is that Paris? Okay,
yeah.
Yeah, you're right.
Hong Kong might have. I'm trying to find anything from Hong Kong. Hong Kong might have Mystic Manor, which is the less scary version of Haunted Mansion, because they take ghosts more seriously. Like it's basically the idea of a cool mansion with weird stuff going on.
Okay.
Yes, it's in Hong Kong. Mystic Manor's in Hong Kong, but there's no ghosts or skeletons or anything like that.
Okay.
It's more culturally you know, fits.
Okay. Interesting.
So Frozen Land. Feelings, if, thoughts?
I mean, look, I think as the years pass, we're seeing that like Frozen is the has staying power, and Frozen like is,
even with a bad sequel,
is with a horrible sequel. I think Frozen 2 is so bad.
Yeah, it's really bad.
Yeah, it's just got an immense staying power, and it's like just really huge. Like it's like little kids. It's like almost become like one of those movies that like Wizard of Oz, where it's like a rite of passage.
Yeah, yeah.
Where like little kids have to see it and love it.
Yeah.
So I'm not surprised.
I wonder if it's, if it becomes wildly successful, if they'll try to do it
live
in
action?
America. No, in America. Oh, the park. The park.
Yeah, I would assume so.
As of now, all we have in America. Actually, I don't know if we have anything at Disneyland, but in Disney World, in Norway, they turned.
Norway is Frozen themed.
Yeah, the Norway in Epcot is now Frozen themed. They
a lot of people
were
really upset about.
Right, because it's like about your original culture, and then they come and
they don't like to see IP in the show, the international showcase or whatever it's called.
Yeah.
It's wormed its way in there because there's also some Ratatouille stuff in France, and like
there was a while where they were very close to doing Studio Ghibli stuff in Japan, like a My Neighbor Totoro ride and things like that. But it never happened.
I feel like I've heard conflicting things about Disney World, that like I've heard that they have a bunch of land that they could still develop. I don't know if that's necessarily true.
I'm not sure.
So like they could add on to parks and make them bigger. Like it's not always about replacing what's already there. I'm not sure if I'm right about that, but also I feel like Disney's not going to be putting any money into Orlando for
quite a
while.
Right.
Because they're currently at war with the governor.
Right, exactly. So the other news out of Disney is that the Star Wars Galaxy Land Cruise type hotel thing, which everyone said this is a weird business model, asking thousands of dollars for a two-night stay.
So what, can you tell me about this? Because I didn't really know anything about it. So it was a Star Wars hotel that was thousands of dollars a night?
Here's the thing. It was more of a land cruise because you have to stay for it's narrative. You have to stay for two nights. Okay? And so it's two night shifts.
A land cruise?
Yeah.
Like a cruise ship?
Right. I mean, technically it's a cruise through the stars, but I say like a cruise because it's more like a cruise than it is like a hotel. Like you look at the schedule of which 2 days can I go to. You have to arrive at a certain time. You have to end at a certain time.
That is so weird.
So people are like, think
and
now,
it was designed just for super rich people?
I guess. And like Chewbacca's there and he's running around and like somebody's trying to capture him. And depending on how you want to play it, like you can either rat him out to the First Order or you could like try to hide him in your room.
So it's like a fully immersive experience.
Right. During dinner, a lightsaber battle breaks out between Rey and Kylo Ren and shit like that. It's a story.
That's so weird.
And every time you'd go, if you went back more than once, you would just get the same story over and over and over again.
Okay. Also terrible.
Nobody wanted, everyone wanted to do it, right? Every nerd was like, oh, that sounds amazing. But it was prohibitive in its pricing.
Right.
And if you did it, like the only, like a cruise, I believe the only time you got to go into the park was like they would land in Galaxy's Edge and then you'd go out and then back. But like you couldn't like go from there to like the Magic Kingdom.
That's weird.
And so it was its own thing. So people have been saying like, oh, what if they turn it into a hotel? It won't work as a hotel because it's got these tiny little rooms. It doesn't have a lot of rooms. And it was built for this model of 2 days. And it's also not accessible. It's really like in a back lot. So
what the fuck are they going to do with it? That must have cost them millions.
It is really a blunder. Huge failure.
Yeah, is this like the fault of that guy who got shit canned, the last CEO?
No, I have feelings. He sucked, but I also feel like in the corporate world, there are nice guy CEOs and bad guy CEOs. And I feel like Disney wanted to do a lot of nasty shit and let the former CEO, Bob Chapek, be the villain. And then
bring in Bob Iger and be like, I'm back, I'm the good guy.
Right, and he's bringing back shit, but shittier versions. Like, the meal plan is back. And everyone's like, yay, the meal plan is back. And it's like, but it's not as good as the meal plan before Bob Chapek got rid of it.
Are they going to get rid of this horrible, like, you have to pay extra to go on rides model?
Probably not. Probably not.
I don't even... it's also so...
It's confusing. That's the problem.
To me.
That's the problem.
The last time I went to Disney, I think it was before that model had fully kicked in, but there was still, like... There was Lightning Lane, and then Fast Pass was no longer a thing, and we were just found ourselves, and the app was buggy.
Yeah.
And we were just like, very much like, what are we doing? Like, I don't understand. And then I just kept...
What if you don't have a phone?
I remember saying, like, A, what if you don't have a phone? But, like, nobody cares about that anymore. Like,
fuck you if you don't have a phone. People are
basically like, fuck you if you don't have a phone. Yeah. Exactly. Because everything's going to phone. Even, like, the New York City Metro cards are going fully to phone access in a couple of years, I think. No. But I was also thinking, like, what if I am, like... There, I'm a dad, I'm there with my spouse and like my fucking screaming kids, I'm miserable, and I just want them to shut up and like be happy, and like I'm trying to work this app.
Right.
Like I would be suicidal.
Right.
Like
right.
That is, it's hard enough as it is for working families to get to Disney.
Right. And I've heard.
And then to tell you kids we can't go on that ride, it costs extra.
There's some people who believe that as a way that they're trying to make it more elite, that they're actually trying to block out people
because
they've got crowding issues, which they've always had, and the way to do it is to make it more expensive.
That's
and but awful. That means it's just for rich people. That's, which sucks.
I don't like anything about that.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you though, what do you think about this trend towards like narrative immersion? Like, I think the first one would probably be Pandora, the Avatar land, and then Harry Potter in Universal, and then Galaxy's Edge. It's not just a ride anymore. It's a land with a ride that's connected to the land, and you're really in the land, and you're acting, you're role-playing.
I mean, look, what do I think personally? Like, I don't give a shit about that stuff. I actually don't like that.
You don't like it?
No. Like, I'm just not one for... Like, cool, I can walk around the land. Cool, I'll look at the shops or whatever. Like,
yeah.
But I like... I don't know. I like a ride. I also like the variety of Disney. Like, I like... I liked that it could be like, let's go on Peter Pan, and then an hour later I'm on Winnie the Pooh,
right.
And then an hour later I'm here, and like I'm sampling everything from Disney. Like,
right.
These immersive experiences are like these day-long things.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't want to waste my time doing that stuff.
Right, right.
And
right.
I also just like role-playing stuff, like I couldn't give less of a shit about it.
Yeah.
And I know that they've been trying for a while to make even the regular rides more interactive, where like, while you're waiting online, you could play a game, or you could be part of it. Or
yeah.
It's just like, I don't care, but I could see as a kid, like if I was really into Harry Potter, let's say, or I was really into Frozen, that would be really cool for me. So I guess,
right.
I guess if it's aimed more towards kids, that would be cool. But it's also like weirdly like makes me like trigger some kind of like existential anxiety of like, now we're fully immersing ourselves in the simulacrum.
Right,
like,
right.
This is a fantasy.
We fully live in fantasy worlds.
Right. Because at least Disney World, like, there was the veneer of fantasy, but like you knew you were in a theme park.
Yeah.
Like
now
it seems like their goal is to make you feel like you are inside of a different world.
Right, right. I agree with you to some extent. It is fun, but I do agree with you that you want to sample different things. I also think that it's never perfect anyway. Like, if the world of Star Wars is pretty rough, like why would they have Luke Skywalker dolls in a store?
Right.
And if you ask them, they'd be like, oh, don't you know the legend of Luke Skywalker? And it's like, fuck you. Like, you...
I know. Shut the fuck up.
Like, you are not selling Luke Skywalker doll. It can't be this easy to get a lightsaber
also,
in
like,
the world of Star
some
Wars.
Some of it's cool. Like, even that amazing new Star Wars ride. What's it called? In Galaxy's
Rise of
Edge.
Resistance.
Rise of Resistance.
Best ride ever.
That's amazing. It's amazing. It's the best ride ever. It's so smooth. It really does feel like you're moving through the movie.
Yeah.
And like, I remember when you first like board, like you're boarded, and then your ship gets sucked up by what's the New Order? What are they called now?
First Order.
First Order. And then like they mean people come and say like march, and they like yell at you and stuff. Right. And I was like, oh my god, this is awesome. They're in character. But then like we got to like a later part, like one guy came in and half-assedly was like, I'm with the Resistance. Come this way. Okay, make sure you tug on your seatbelts. Let me see you tug
it. So that guy sucks.
Right.
That guy sucks. So like, I had a good guy.
But
a guy who was like, come on. We gotta fucking go.
But which is great. But it's like, it also like, you'll be taken out of it. It's so easy to be taken out of it.
Right.
Well, like one person is not selling it. We'll take you right out of it.
Well, the thing that I think made makes the ride good is they figured out a way to make the boring waiting part of it. Yeah. How do you make the line part of it? How do you make getting you into smaller groups part of it?
Right.
That's what makes it feel like they say it's like a 25-minute experience.
Right.
Because really, all that stuff isn't the ride.
It's the line, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's also like, I heard people like, when you're on the little resistance ship and then you get off and then you're back on the line, yeah. I heard people being like, "Was that it? Was that the ride? What's going on? Why are we back online?"
Yeah, yeah.
So like, I think people are still just like not totally used to it.
Yeah. Well, I've said this before, multiple times. I think it's very weird existentially that in a world where we have actual fascism, that like in a first world country we pay for fantasy fascism.
Yeah,
like I'm gonna pay a lot of money to bring my family to a place where a man in a fucking Nazi outfit is gonna scream at me and we're gonna love it.
It really is. No, I was seriously, when that happened, they were like, get off, line up, whatever. I was like, this is like a Holocaust like
yeah,
like reenactment we're in right now,
right?
And you get off and all of the stormtroopers are pointing their guns at you. Yeah, and your family,
like, oh my god.
It's like, dear, oh, Lord. Jesus. yeah, it's a lot.
Yeah, it is a lot. yeah, it's weird.
But they save themselves by being like funny, like they're tongue in cheek.
Well, like the
and, like Nazis, I don't think were that punny.
Well, when we went, there was this sweet old man, and Jen was like, "This guy's not right for this.
Oh.
This guy fucking worked at like the fucking Dumbo ride for 40 years, and then he was like, "I'll try the new ride." And he just doesn't belong here. He wouldn't make it a day in the fucking Empire. yeah. Well, it's like the kids with the, you know, when they go up to the, like the villains, like the queen will be an asshole and you love it.
Yeah, it's great. I love the kids who like bow to the villains.
Those oh, yeah, villains. Yeah, of course. Okay, so let's go to Trailer Corner. You ready for some trailers?
Sure, I'm ready.
So let's talk about Oppenheimer. I was not excited about this because excitement is not an emotion you can have for anything involving Christopher Nolan.
No.
Because he is... He's a watchmaker of a filmmaker.
Yeah.
I love the Batman movies, but famously they have no humor. And any like joke in any of them always falls flat as hell.
Yeah, totally joyless, yeah.
And Tenet was
I didn't
like it, but it was I know people jokingly say his movies are confusing. I got it, but also I was like, this is
confusing. I've also never seen the one that's like the
Inception?
Yeah.
Inception's good and has some good like sentimental emotion.
Okay.
The only one of his movies that I think actually has like genuine human emotion is Interstellar. But again, it's very, very hard sci-fi.
Yeah.
Which is fine. It's interesting that he's a big blockbuster filmmaker who makes these things that are not like doesn't resonate emotionally.
Right.
And also him demanding that Tenet be in theaters right in the heart of the
pandemic. Yeah, that was weird.
Was very weird.
That was a misstep.
It was very weird.
I feel like he was like, I'm going to be the person to bring back cinema.
Yeah, and it was way too early.
Yeah, and then everyone was like, no, we don't want to see this.
But Oppenheimer is a biopic of, was his name Charles Oppenheimer? Right. Oppenheimer, one of the scientists.
The Manhattan Project.
Yeah, right? Basically creating the nuclear weapon. The bomb, during World War II.
It
looks good. You got Cillian Murphy from Peaky
Blinders.
Sneaky
Blinders. Peaky Blinders.
Fucking
Sneaky Pass.
Sneaky Peakies. He was also Scarecrow, right, in Batman. He's Oppenheimer. You've got Matt Damon is like this American general. No.
I thought Matt Damon was just chewing up the scenery.
He was
overacting his way through the trailer.
Oh, he looked fun, though. He looked like he's going to give you some levity. Like the scene where he's like, is there a chance
nearly zero? Yeah.
You blow up the world, and he's like, it's nearly zero.
I got a little bit of an ick from the trailer. I'm not going to lie.
Tell me.
Because I felt like it was like, the atomic bomb is sexy, baby. Like, that's the vibe I was getting.
So I disagree. I think that they are...
That's not what the messaging is, but I feel like that was the aesthetic.
See, I feel like the aesthetic is like espionage thriller.
Right. Like it's exciting.
I mean, it is exciting. Like nobody knows you're doing it in secret.
Yeah.
And it's a thing that will end the world, the war.
Yeah, it will end us.
Right. Right. I mean, that's the thing. Like Oppenheimer's famous quote is, "I am become death, the destroyer of worlds. Yes,
which is sexy as hell.
So, but I'm interested in it because it's like, this is like America's, this is humanity's greatest sin ever, right? Like,
yeah, I mean, it does look good. I just, the sleekness of it and the fact that it's just like all attractive people. I don't know. Part of me, like, it did trigger like a little bit of a moral quandary in me of like, should I, like, do I want to see this?
But aren't you, just from a historical point of view?
Yeah, no, I'm interested. I will, like, see, and I'm sure I will.
Like, I didn't know they made a fake town and did shit like that. Like, I don't know enough about the Manhattan Project.
Yeah, I knew some of it, but I do like that they address right in the trailer, like, ooh, this might be really bad.
Yeah, this is
terrible. I feel like it's coming at a time where, you know, like, the media reflects, like, the anxieties of the moment.
Yeah.
I feel like, and sometimes, like, something from the past will be allegorical for what's going on right now. I feel like this is going to very much, like, remind people of, like, what we're doing right now with AI.
Yeah.
Of, like, because the world is kind of having an AI freakout moment.
Yeah.
And it's like, what should we be doing this
morally right
now? It's kind of echoed in that.
Right.
Because ChatGPT is scary as hell. Have you played around with it?
I haven't, no.
It's really frightening. Yeah. I'm somebody who, I'm like a Ray Bradbury. Like, I get really scared of stuff like that.
Yeah.
And it's really scary. Like, you ask it to write you anything, and it will instantly produce something that is...
It's wild.
That it's really, like, it's so human-like. It's insane.
It's very crazy.
Yeah, it's very, very crazy and scary. And also, like, for me, as somebody who, like, teaches writing, it's the first time ever in my career where I looked at something and been like, oh, this, like, might eliminate my job forever.
Well, I was talking about this a little bit in the last episode when I was talking about Megan with Nadia. Like, I think it's the visual things scare me, that you can, like, type in anything and be like,
yeah, make an image of this.
Yeah, and it'll do one, and it'll look so real.
What about, did you see the...
That could muddy all of history. Yeah,
I,
like, 100 years, we could have no idea what ever really happened.
Well, I just had a conversation with about this with a colleague the other day, where I was just like, we are, like, between misinformation, disinformation, and AI, we are undoing what reality means.
Yeah.
Like, what is reality anymore?
Right.
Because,
right.
Like, somebody sent me an AI... they were, like, all those AI photos of Trump being arrested and, like, being dragged out of his building by the cops that, like, so many people believed were real. And then there was one of him and Biden building a snowman together. And it was, like, they made up. And a bunch of people thought it was real, like, because it looked so real. And it's, like, what even, like, isn't this going to affect our justice system? Like, what is even evidence? What is proof that something happened anymore? Because you can make up documents now. Yeah. You can make up photos. You can make up recordings.
Right.
And just the other day, Apple said that they're very close to releasing something that will, your phone will learn how to mimic your voice within 15 minutes so that you can send messages, text messages that somebody can listen to in your voice.
Wow.
That's scary as fuck.
That is scary. But what's even scarier is, in a month, it'll be not scary.
Yeah.
Because we get so used to
it. A bunch of my friends who work, like, in companies or whatever, one of my friends works in publishing, whatever, they've told me that, like, their companies have already started using ChatGPT to do little clerical things.
Yeah.
Already. They're like, oh, my friend texted me the other day, and she was like, we used ChatGPT to, none of us, like, knew how to write this tough email we needed to write. So we asked ChatGPT to do it.
Wow.
And it did it. And then we just modified it a little bit.
Wow.
Where it's like, that would, somebody used to have to do that.
Right.
It's totally, I don't know, it's messing with me. Especially, like I said, as a teacher of writing, I'm like, why do we even teach writing anymore if this thing can do it automatically?
You'll have younger people who will, without any irony, genuinely say, why would I need to learn
how to write a paper when it's going to do it for me?
Right.
A couple people have made the analogy of, like, it's the literary calculator.
Yeah,
where they're
yeah.
like, this is what math teachers have been feeling like forever, where it's like all they get is students saying, like, why do I need to learn how to do this?
Yeah.
It's fucking, but anyway, that's where I see that anxiety of, like, should we be doing this right now? This is going to take us to a new frontier that's unexplored.
We're not,
it could be our undoing.
Right. And we're not complex or smart enough to handle what we've created.
Yeah.
And that's the problem. All right, so the next trailer is The Haunted Mansion. Mm-mm. Now, this is the second trailer that came out. The first trailer disappointed me, and I was kind of like, okay, I don't know
how I feel. Remind me of what the teaser trailer was like.
It was like, it was mostly the protagonist. What's his name? The guy LaKeith? From... Yeah, yeah.
I love him.
LaKeith Stanfield. Yeah, it's him walking through, like, I guess the endless hallway. And I just got a weird vibe from it. I was like, ah, this doesn't look like they're getting it right. But the new trailer that just came out this week, it had the music from it. Yeah. It had the bride in it.
Jamie Lee Curtis.
It had Jamie Lee Curtis as
Madame Marble, right?
Madame Leota.
Madame Leota. Madame Marble's for Wicked, sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah, Madame Leota.
It looks like the main villain is the Hatbox Ghost. He's the guy who's like, he's holding a hatbox and then his head disappears and then his head appears in the box.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So he seems like the main bad guy. Oh, you see like the two ghosts that are in the portraits that shoot at each other. Yeah. It seems like they're, unlike the first movie, the Eddie Murphy one, they're getting the aesthetic closer. They're doing the music. They're getting the characters from the ride that people
I like
know.
That... In the trailer, you saw somebody like in something that looked like the ride pod.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah. The
what's that called? The
Doom buggy.
The Doom buggy, like being, it says take the ride. And then you see somebody in the Doom buggy, like being like shot through the house really fast.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which is pretty cool.
Yeah, that was very cool.
It was a cool like callback to like It Is a Ride, which I feel like Pirates of the Caribbean kind of didn't really emphasize that it was based on a ride. And right. This seems like it's really tying itself to the ride way more.
Right. It's Tiffany Haddish as like some kind of like mystic or whatever.
This seems like it's geared toward young adults and adults more than kids. It seems a little scary.
It seems like they're going to genuinely make it scary.
Yeah.
What's interesting about the, we were talking before about Phantom Manor. The plot of the Eddie Murphy movie is basically the Phantom Manor plot.
Which is what?
Like, it's about a guy and his daughter, and he does, and she wants to marry this guy, and he kills the guy.
Is that... I've never seen the original Haunted Mansion.
It's not great. But, so, I have all these feelings. I love the Haunted Mansion. So, at first, I was like, but I'm feeling better about it.
Yeah, it looks...
It's not going to be the movie in my head, you know, but...
It looks fun. It looks like a fun popcorn movie.
Yeah, and if it's a little scary and a little, you know, and it does all the things, like use the music. The music's so iconic.
Yeah.
Have them sing Grim Grinning Ghosts.
Yeah.
Which is, like, the best ride song ever.
Yeah.
In the Eddie Murphy movie, there's, like, one scene where the head bus sing it, like, a cappella style. But it's not enough.
Yeah.
You really want to... You need it, really.
You really need that. And then Danny DeVito.
And Danny DeVito.
Who's fantastic.
Yeah, so I'm more optimistic about this now.
Yeah, I think it looks good.
It looks like there's a seance. It looks like they, and this is smart because it's so tied into it in Origins. It looks like they're taking the plot from The House on Haunted Hill.
Yes. Yeah.
Right, where people are brought to the house to have a seance and they have to stay that they don't really know each other.
Yeah.
Or is that The Haunting? I always confuse The Haunting and The House on Haunted Hill.
Me too. It's The Haunting of Hill House and The House on Haunted Hill.
I know.
I get them confused.
It's one of those.
I don't remember which one.
It's one of those.
Yeah. I could also see like if it's coming out this summer, right?
Yeah, it's coming out. July.
It's gonna be like a big summer blockbuster, hopefully. Yeah. And then I think that if it's really successful, I could see it being a franchise.
Oh, of course. There's
certainly franchise opportunity there.
Well, there was talk for a little while about, because everyone wants a cinematic universe like Marvel, of like it being connected to that Jungle Cruise that came out
recently. Was actually very good.
I enjoyed that a lot. It felt like kind of like an Indiana Jones movie.
It was. That was fun.
Yeah.
So what would you connect Jungle Cruise, this, and Pirates?
Yeah.
Is Pirates like its own thing?
No, well, they're supposed to be rebooting Pirates, which would be part of this.
Rebooting, like starting over?
Yeah, without Johnny Depp.
See, like, I don't know about that. Like, rebooting, like, literally rebooting, or just, like, a soft reboot where it's, like, kind of like a sequel?
Yeah, I guess like that. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It's weird because, like, Disneyland opened, and it had, like, all these rides that were not based on movies or anything, that were really inspired by the World's Fair.
Yeah.
And then now those have spawned IP.
It's weird, right?
It is weird.
It's also weird that...
When is the Hall of Presidents movie coming out? That's what I want to know.
It took until like 2021, 2022, before there was a Mickey Mouse ride.
Yes.
Like, that's crazy, right?
It's really crazy. Yeah, it really is. When you think about it, really crazy. Like, yeah. Mickey only showed up in meet and greets, and, like, he used to have a little kiddie playland in Magic Kingdom.
Right. But he's synonymous with Disney and Disney World. And it's like, here's the Mickey ride.
Yeah, which is also incredible.
I know. It opened, like, the day I left.
The technology is... It's the same technology as... Rise of the Resistance, where, like, you're on a magnetic track, and you just, like, fly all over the place.
Right, you're the computer is turning you the way it wants to turn you and moving you the way it wants to move you.
It's so smooth, and it is amazing. That's a really amazing ride. I'm happy about, because I love the Great Movie Ride, but I think it is a worthy successor to the Great Movie Ride.
I agree. You know, I've only watched it. So the last trailer we looked at is the TV trailer for season 4 of Never Have I Ever.
Can't wait.
I can't wait.
Looks like she's back to her old stuff.
Oh, Davey.
She looks like she's... So, okay. The time moves weird in this universe, because now it looks like Paxton is like a teacher at the school.
Yeah.
I guess he's going to come in as a sub or something.
Or something.
Or a coach.
Right, because in the trailer, he, like, comes in, and she's, like surprised to see him there.
And she's a senior now, and I don't know. I'm excited. I think she's going to ultimately end up with what's-his-face?
Oh, what?
Not Paxton.
The other guy.
One. I'm on team the other guy.
But you don't know his name.
But even though I don't remember his name. Every season has ended with her with one or the other.
Ben.
So season one ended with her kissing Ben. Season two ended up with her... getting together with Paxton finally.
Yeah.
Season 3 ended up with her going back to Ben.
Right, and having sex with him.
And having sex with Ben.
Losing
her
virginity.
And now it's picking up right from there. And it looks like there's some Paxton stuff too. I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. It's a great show.
It's a really good show.
I'm happy it's ending. I think 4 seasons is smart.
Perfect. And I didn't like the second one that much. I felt like the second one had to do a lot of work to get us back to a good place. Mm-hmm. And then I thought 3 was very good.
I liked it. 3 was different because, like, she spent the first half of 3 in a relationship with Paxton.
Yeah.
So it kind of changed the format.
Yeah. And post Velma, it's become du jour thing to be offended by, to hate.
Mindy Kaling. I'm surprised it's taken this long. It's like she's gone the way of Lena Dunham now, where it's all of a sudden everybody hates her.
Right.
And I think it's 2 things. I think it's Velma is three things. Velma has worked against her, and I think people having absolute vitriol for Velma has made them look at her past stuff and say, like, let's see what we could call problematic.
Right.
So then they've looked through everything she's done, including Late Night, which I think is a great movie, Mini Project, which I really liked, even though it has some problems, and Never Have I Ever, and Sex Lives of College Girls, and have said, like, it's very problematic that she always has her lead woman of color end up with a white guy. So that's, like, something she's been heavily criticized for.
Right.
And then also she's lost a ton of weight from Ozempic, and a lot of people really hate that too.
But
so people hate her now.
But if you make a story that's based on, like, your own life,
right?
How it's weird when people are like, "That's I get it. I totally understand representation. I totally understand.
I get it too." But I also feel like, as a fan of hers, I do feel like everything she writes is just a reenactment of her and BJ Novak. Because she and BJ Novak in real life, I think, are just, like, together. Like, there are rumors. There have been rumors for years that they've been secretly together for years.
And that
kid she has is his.
Oh, okay.
She does always end up with the white guy.
But she did in real life,
like,
maybe.
And she did, maybe. And, like, either her, if she's in it, or her whoever's standing in for her in whatever show she's making does. So I get that.
But also, I think what people find problematic is she'll feel... outcast, or in the case of Davey, she'll feel like she's less attractive because the people around her see her as different.
See, you know what else she's
but being... that is isn't that an actual problem that somebody who's a minority might feel?
I take a lot of issue with these are, like, some of these are, like, real Gen Z criticisms, which I hate to sound old, but like I saw one a series of TikToks where they were criticizing Never Have I Ever because Davey, like, makes fun of her heritage and makes...
Right.
She makes jokes about, like, having hairy arms and stuff like that, where it's like... But that is coming from a woman who is Indian American, who's writing it. And I do feel like if you are of a culture, you have license to make fun
of
that.
Right, that's the rule I always felt.
Like, that's the old Jewish humor rule. Like, you're allowed to make fun of your own religion, your own culture, whatever.
Right, are we going to go back and try to, like, hold Mel Brooks to the fire and say he's anti-Semitic?
Right.
It's like, you're Mel Brooks.
Right.
Like, I always felt like the rule was you're allowed to make fun of the thing you are.
Right.
Because you're in that culture.
Right. Yeah. It's not punching down.
Right.
You are in it.
Right.
Yeah. Because I think, to me, the golden rule is always like, as long as you're not punching down, I think satire is fine. You
right, right, right.
Punching up.
Right, right,
like,
right.
That's good satire.
Right.
But yeah, so I just don't agree.
Yeah, yeah.
It's... But I mean, I won't. Velma was very bad.
Yeah, it was awful. Huge, I couldn't get through one episode.
But was she the creative force behind it or just the voice?
I think she was creative force behind it.
Okay, yeah.
It was just a giant misstep.
It was a giant misstep. It was like, I also think it was very mismarketed.
Sure.
Because it really is like a South Park. Or like very vulgar and like very adult.
I think the
big, and they were like, oh, it's like Wednesday, but with Velma, which
nope,
it's not.
No, not yeah, at all. Not even not a little like bit. That.
Yeah.
I think the big misstep was she was trying to make fun of it and she didn't realize people like it.
Right.
Like, genuinely, people have, even if you're not watching it, genuinely people have good feelings about Scooby-Doo.
Yeah.
So to be like mocking it, I think people were not on board for.
And right off the bat, when it was like, oh, like making fun of the dog, like there's no dog,
right, like
that, people were really mad. It makes me wonder if that planned but never happened Flintstones reboot that was gonna be done by Seth MacFarlane would have gotten a similar reaction.
Maybe
because I'm sure he would have been irreverent in that.
I wonder if eventually there would have been a dog and like maybe Shaggy's the only one who could hear him, because if you watch Velma, Shaggy, who they go, he goes by his normal name, Norville, which was always his real name,
yeah,
is like this uptight dude. So like you just by watching the pilot, you're like, okay, eventually he's going to smoke pot.
Yeah.
He's going to turn into Shaggy, but we never got there and we never will.
Well, did we get there by the end or did we all just stop watching?
We all stopped watching. Yeah. I stopped watching after the first episode, I think.
Yeah.
Or if I even got second, through it.
Yeah. I mean, right off the bat, there's like cartoon nudity and stuff, which
I'm not against either.
I'm not clutching my pearls. Like, some people were really like, this is Scooby-Doo. How dare she?
No, it's not.
Everybody relax.
It's not Mickey Mouse, like, fucking somebody.
Like, Scooby-Doo was always a little low rent.
And it was always a little bit, there were weed jokes in it. Like, it always was a little bit edgy for Hanna-Barbera.
There's no way that wasn't. They were high.
Well, of course,
and there was always smoke coming out of the window.
And their paranoia was because they were high.
Yeah. Yes.
But never, however, I think I didn't like Mindy Project, but I did like Late Night, and I do like her in general.
Yeah.
But this has been my favorite thing from her.
I haven't watched Sex Lives of College Girls.
Neither have I.
I've heard that it's better than Never Have I Ever. That's really good.
I'll have to take your word for that.
Yeah,
because I have not seen it.
Yeah,
but
I
like
seen it either,
Never Have I Ever.
But I've heard it's really good.
This to me, this is, and I think what this could happen. This could be the model of how we successfully end a Netflix show.
Yeah,
because a lot of Netflix shows happen, and there'll be one season and that's it. Or maybe if there's some interest, there'll be two seasons and then that's it.
Yeah.
It looks like they were told at some point, we'll give you four, make it all end in four. Because I like Ginny and Georgia. There's been two seasons. Just the other day, they announced season 3 and 4 together. They said, we got two more seasons.
And that'll be it.
Right. That could be the successful way to do it. Like,
well, like Glow, they fucked up.
Yeah, that didn't end,
Glow,
right?
Glow just ended on a huge cliffhanger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I feel like writers do cliffhangers because they think it might force the studios to it's not gonna happen.
Yeah, and they were like going into like they were just starting to like explore what's his name sexuality on the show, and like really a lot was left hanging in the air.
Right, right. I only watched I think the first season of Glow.
Oh, I liked all of it, but yeah, it ended. Gina Davis was in the third season; she was really good.
It went up to three.
I think it went up. Yes. It's either two or yes, because two ended with them getting canceled and going to Vegas, and three is their Vegas show.
Interesting.
With Gina Davis as the like the owner of the casino or whatever.
Interesting.
And it was really, I really liked it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then it just ends. It's upsetting.
Speaking of just ending, let's take a break.
All right.
And we'll come back with the chill sesh. PCMC. I'm Mike Bongiorno. I'm here today with Anthony Bongiorno. How are you?
I'm fantastic.
Oh, I'm so
I'd really
glad
love to,
hear
to sit
that.
On this chair.
Oh, no, that's the that plushie chair. At,
but there are just a million plushies on it. I'm sitting on a very uncomfortable fold-out.
Oh, it's a pretty comfortable chair.
Well, these stuffed animals sit pretty.
But look how nice they put on
this,
there. You
did
know?
I have, was this mine? The CT? Or is no, this a newer mine. Version of the same toy that I had?
Newer version. I got that, ooh. I believe, when I went to Universal Studios.
Oh, yes,
with Janine.
Because mine had a plushy face.
Yeah.
This has a rubber face.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. So this is pretty old then.
Yeah. 2007, right?
Yeah, wow.
You're knocking shit down. What are you doing?
I'm sorry.
You knocked this, over a little Deadpool. He's sitting in
at home, there
lap.
Is a recliner, a perfectly good, very comfortable looking recliner that is covered in plushies.
It's not perfectly good. I don't think it comes out anymore.
Oh, okay.
But it is covered in
it's
plushies.
It's covered in plushies.
Yeah.
Oh, you have, what's his name, that little dragon?
Figment.
Figment.
Imagination.
Figment. Oh, Miss Piggy.
I've got Muppet Babies Miss Piggy, Muppet Babies Kermit.
You got a big...
I've got three Baby Yodas.
Who's this guy again? This cute one.
That's a Porg.
A Porg. They're cute. Who's the guy from... like the only good part of Rise of Skywalker, like that little...
Babu Frick.
Yeah, I loved Babu Frick.
There's a bunch of them in Mandalorian this season.
Haven't watched.
Baby Grogu cuddles one and he screams and it became a meme.
That's cute. Isn't Baby Grogu like old? Like, don't they live forever so Baby Grogu's actually like 80 or something?
No, well, yeah, in season one he's 50. So, like when they first get him, like he's 50. Like, it's like a surprise that he's a baby because he's told, like, you have to go get this guy. He's 50.
Oh, yeah.
And...
Adorable.
They don't live forever. I mean, Yoda died at, like, 900 and something.
Yeah, they live quite a while. That's cute.
So, this is Chill Shesh. This is Sheshwe Chill. And we just talk about what's what we're watching, what we're doing. What are you watching and doing?
I think... The other two is my thing that I'm chilling with.
So the other two,
I often wonder, like I fight back and forth, like is this my obsession or is this my what I'm chilling with?
Can you close that?
But I think I'm more chilling with the other two.
Tell us what this.
The other two is a comedy series on HBO Max, which in like
Max.
A few weeks is just becoming Max.
Max. I think it's already just Max, isn't it?
Is it or did that happen already? Yeah, because they merged with Discovery Plus.
Yeah.
It's crazy because it feels like HBO Max just came out.
Yeah.
I don't know. But it is a comedy series that was originally, season one was on Comedy Central, and then it moved to HBO Max.
Interesting.
For season two, and then season three like just dropped, and just like a friend at work told me I should check it out. He's like, it's really, really funny. So I just picked it up on a recommendation, and I really do like it. It's got 97% on Rotten Tomatoes. It's really well reviewed, but I feel like nobody watches it.
I've never even heard of it.
Yeah, it's from these two. It's from this team, Chris Kelly and Sarah Schneider. They worked on Saturday Night Live together. They were co-head writers for a little while in like 2017 or 18. Mm-hmm. And then they did the 30 Rock thing. So this is like a Lorne Michaels produced sitcom that probably NBC passed on, so it went to Comedy Central, and then it went to Max.
Okay.
But it's about these two, this brother and sister that are like adult brother and sister, like in their 30s, played by Drew Tarver and Helene York. They're both really funny. And their mom is Molly Shannon.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a little brother who is like a Justin Bieber.
Mm-hmm.
And he becomes like really, really famous as like a little young tween pop star. Uh-huh. And it's like, but then like them, like the older brother is like an aspiring actor and the sister's just like a fuck up. And that's why it's called The Other Two. Cause it's like, he's so famous and like America loves him. And then they're just the other two. But it's really funny. Molly Shannon's really great as the mom. It's kind of got like a 30 Rock sensibility in that like some of the humor's like, it's pretty fast. And some of the humor's like ridiculous. Like you would expect from like an SNL type show.
Yeah.
But it's just, it's super funny.
It's a one camera show,
it's
right?
It's single camera. One of the things I really love about it is the kid is not just a joke. Cause in the pilot, it's like, oh, their little brother Chase like released a single. Oh my God, Chase has gone viral on YouTube. Oh my God, Chase got a record deal. And then like, as the show goes on, like he's getting more and more famous. But it has heart. And what I really like about it is like it's set up in exposition that their father had died the year before. And the kid is like young. So they're not like, you would think that like they're jealous of him. And there's a little bit of that in the pilot of like, they're such fuck ups and he's doing so well and he's only a kid.
Yeah.
But what I really like about it is they're really good. They're really good big brother and sister to him. Uh-huh. And like part of the comedy is like them looking out for him too, because like people want to take advantage of him because he's young and famous. Yeah. And he's just like a really sweet kid. Yeah. And like he doesn't obviously know like what he's getting himself into. Uh-huh. It's just, it's really funny. Molly Shannon's great. I think it's a great show.
She's great. I saw her recently in, what was it called? The Good Person? That Zach Braff movie? Oh,
yeah. She's really great.
She's good. She's a good actress.
Did you know, I was going to say, you know what she was really good in where she wasn't funny really at all was White Lotus. Did you see White Lotus?
No, I didn't.
So she, White Lotus is all about, season one and season two to a certain extent, is all about like just like disgusting rich people.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's one character who like her whole arc is she married like this rich douche and she's struggling with like she wants to continue working as a journalist. Uh-huh. And he's just like, I mean, like, babe, like, why would you work? Like, we're rich. Uh-huh. And she's just like, why did I marry the wrong guy? This whole thing. And then he's like a total mama's boy and his mother is Molly Shannon. Mm. And she comes in and she's kind of like villainous as uh-huh. like an older rich lady.
Yeah.
And she's just like so good. And then like there's a scene where she's talking to the character Rachel. And Rachel's like, I was thinking about maybe getting a job.
Uh-huh.
And Molly Shannon is like, no, why would you do that? No, that's horrible. And she's like, now that you're in society, like you want to run charities.
Uh-huh.
And it's just like, she's so good.
Yeah.
And she's not being like funny. It's deeply satirical.
She's a good actress.
Yeah, she's a good actress.
In A Good Person, she plays the mother of Florence Pugh, who's like a pill addict.
Yeah.
But she's trying to deal with her daughter's pill addiction, but she's got a bit of a drinking problem that she's not dealing with too.
Okay.
And it's
sounds very Postcards from the Edge.
It's yes, except no one's successful. yeah, like she has scenes with Morgan Freeman that are really good. Like she's like surprisingly very good.
She's great. She's recurring on season one, but then I think once they nailed the formula, mm-hmm. they're like, oh, we need Molly Shannon every episode. So she's regular in season two and three. And my favorite character is Lance, mm-hmm. who is played by, I can't think of the actor's name right now, I'll look him up. But he's the handsome guy from Scream 6.
Oh, the guy across the hall?
The guy across the hall.
Across the building, whatever.
With the teeth.
Yeah.
Who's like really good looking. Lance Arroyo is the character, and he's played by Josh Segarra.
Uh-huh.
He's so funny. Like, it's funny because I first saw him in Scream 6, where he was kind of just like the brooding, like, hot guy.
Yeah.
But then on this show, like, he's like the sister's, like, dopey ex-boyfriend. Uh-huh. But he's just, like, so sweet. And his thing is, like, he designs shoes.
Uh-huh.
So, like, in every episode, he's like, check out these shoes I made, babe. And it'll be like, he's like, these shoes have change in them, so you can look like $1 million, but when you walk, you sound like a dollar. It's just, like, he's so stupid, but he's amazing.
That's fun. That's a lot of fun. Yeah, I'll try to check out at least an episode of it.
Oh, it's definitely worth it.
I heard a writer of it on a podcast recently, and that person was funny, and I was like, oh, well. And I didn't even realize till the end, they were like, yeah, I work on the other two. And I was like, okay.
Yeah, it's good.
But you've triggered a thought to me. Looking back now, in the present, which is where you and I live.
Always.
Do you wish that 30 Rock had heart at all?
I think about this a lot, and I think my answer is no.
Okay.
But here's what I wish. I like 30 Rock's so funny.
And it's perfect.
Part of
it's
what's
amazing.
So funny is that it doesn't have heart, really.
Right.
But then when there are sweet moments, they resonate so much more because it's so rare. I wish that the finale of 30 Rock had been a little bit more sentimental.
I agree.
Like the 30 Rock finale is just so balls to the wall ridiculous.
Yeah.
But I wish it had a little bit more of, like, Parks and Recreation had a very sentimental finale.
Yeah.
I wish it had a little bit more of that.
Right.
But overall, right. I like the 30 Rock kind of, like, fast, not a lot of heart kind of thing.
Right. I mean, there was some sentiment, like, when Jack's mother dies, that's a little bit of a...
Yeah.
But...
There was a thing about her wanting to adopt, which got dropped.
Well, that's the thing.
Some dropped storylines.
Maybe heart isn't the problem. The problem is stakes.
Development and stakes.
Yeah, like, she'd get a boyfriend, and it'd be like, okay, it's a big deal that she gets a boyfriend, and then, like, he would just sort of be gone very quickly.
Yeah, he would do something weird.
you know, she gets a new show. And
you,
like,
you said you had a meeting with Peter Venkman.
Yeah.
You use Ghostbusters for evil.
Like, I feel like the status would never change. Even though, like, you would think it would. Like, a new season would begin and something would be different. You'd be like, oh, there's a new writer. Or, oh, there's a new thing. Oh, there's a new cast member on the show. Oh,
the new cast member.
Oh, this is going to be a whole new thing. And then, like, he's barely in it ever again. I mean, I do think that part of what makes it so snappy is that it doesn't slow down for sentimentality.
Yeah.
But I feel like if it had a little bit more heart, it would be more than just something nerds like. It might be. It would be a Stone Cold classic that the whole world loves.
Yeah. Well, it's like that thing of like, there, many people have made this comparison that like Schitt's Creek is essentially Arrested Development, but with heart.
But with heart, right.
And I think a lot, Arrested Development's a classic, but I think a lot more people like Schitt's Creek than like Arrested Development.
Yes, yes. Yeah, I agree.
So yeah, I do think that it's got wider appeal. And I think that Parks and Recreation has more heart. And The Office kind of started off not with a lot and then got it later.
Yeah. Did you like the finale of Parks and Rec?
I did.
I haven't seen it again, but I remember watching it feeling slightly disappointed.
What were you disappointed by? I like that there were a lot of like hints. Nothing was said directly.
Right. Like at the end, that you see their Secret Service and you're like, who became president? Him or her?
Right, and you don't know.
Right. Maybe it was more bittersweet and I didn't want bittersweetness. Well, first of all, it has a time jump. And everyone hates a time jump. Time jumps are it's fun to write, but not fun to watch or read. Everyone hates time jumps.
Was the first ever time jump finale Mad About You? That's the earliest one I can remember.
Maybe. The concept of finale is
that was maligned, wasn't it? Didn't people hate the finale of Mad About You?
I don't remember, but I know they basically undid it when they did the reboot.
They did. Do you remember Janine Garofalo played the daughter as an adult?
Yeah.
And then it jumped to the future where they had been divorced and then they got back together all later in life.
I remember liking it, actually. I remember because the thing about that show was always that they weren't a compatible couple. They loved each other, but they really weren't right for each other.
Right. But then they ended up getting back together. And I never watched the reboot.
Neither did I.
It was on like Sprite TV.
Yes. it was on the Skittles streaming network.
Now streaming on Sega Genesis. It's so sad. Because that was, I think time has forgotten Mad About You, and it makes me sad because I think I haven't revisited it yet, but I want to because I feel like it would hold up.
It's funny to me that like Friends is still big and Seinfeld's still big, but Mad About You isn't thrown in there with that.
I know, which is upsetting.
And it's like connected too in that little universe.
It is. And I feel like Mad About You is almost a perfect blend of Friends and Seinfeld because it's got like that New York-y Woody Allen thing, but it has like the heart of Friends because you care about the characters and the relationships.
But Kramer was in Mad About You.
And so was Phoebe's sister, was the waitress.
Was the main cat. Yeah,
on Mad About You. Maybe it's because Paul Reiser is no one anymore, so people are like, fuck Mad About You.
How dare you? He's in Stranger Things. He's in the new Beverly Hills Cop.
Listen, I love Paul Reiser. But also, like, Paul Reiser fell off and Helen Hunt kind of fell off, too.
Yeah.
Like, she won the Oscar, and then it was just like,
Yeah.
She just kind of went away. But anyway, yeah, that's what I've been chilling with. What have you been chilling with?
Oh, lots of stuff. I read Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret.
Did you love it?
I did love it.
It's adorable.
And then we saw the new film and we loved that just as much.
So
it was really good.
So okay.
Really good film.
So here's my question about it. Because I've read that book, obviously. I mean, you can read that book in like an hour.
Right.
It's like a kid's book.
Right.
I love Judy Blume. We stan Judy Blume. Because
she owns
the pioneer
a bookstore in Florida and she works there.
I want to go. We would not have YA if it weren't for Judy Blume.
That's right.
And she got raped. She doesn't get the
credit.
Did
you see the new documentary about her?
No, I want to.
It's really good. She got raked over the coals in the 80s.
Yes.
For like...
By book banners.
She was banned for like bullshit.
Because she wrote Forever, which was about sex.
And also because she wrote... is it Dee Dee? Deenie? She wrote a book about a girl... It was about something else, but there's one line where the girl masturbates and people are like, how do you write a book about a girl masturbating?
These book banners, and they're like, coming back in full force these days, which is making me very upset. She's awesome. So you read the book and the book is adorable and earnest.
Yes.
My question is, since the movie's going for an aesthetic and it looks like it's trying to capture both young people and adult audiences who read it as a kid, is the movie like, I get the feeling that the movie's like more self-aware than the book is.
No. Its tone is pitch perfect. It's just as adorable. It's just as wide-eyed as the okay. book. The big, if you have to say there's a difference, right? The big difference, which I think is so smart, and I think even Judy Blume said she likes it, is that they give the mother so much more to do.
That's what I'm saying. I think that they give the mother more to do because they know moms who read the book as a kid are taking their daughter.
Right, right, right. And also, you know, the mother doesn't have a lot to do in the book.
Yeah. I think it's smart that they kept it set in the 70s.
Yes. That was very smart.
Because I don't think you could adapt that story to now.
No, exactly. I mean, just everything's different. The way kids relate to each other are different. I mean, I'm sure young girls being still
kept in the dark about their periods.
Right. Yeah. It's but it, you know, despite being in the 70s, it doesn't feel dated. It doesn't feel like a time piece.
Does it have like?
It feels like it's a universal story about a person getting older.
Yeah,
or a kid growing.
Is it one of those things where it's like it's set in the past, but it has like a progressive sensibility kind of thing?
Yeah, but the book has a progressive sense.
Yeah, it does.
Like people talk about it as like the period book, because her big thing is she wants to get
her. Yeah.
But like it's more an agnostic book.
Oh, yeah.
Like it's, I mean, like the...
it's so, like, are you their God?
Yeah. Other than like, and her father is Jewish, and the father's mother wants her to be Jewish. And then the mother's parents were like strict Christian to the point where they like cast their daughter out for marrying a Jew. And then the mother kind of doesn't want her to have any religion. Like, like that to me is the more progressive
thing. Kathy Bates is the grandma, right?
Incredible.
Kathy Bates.
Incredible. They added her into scenes that she wasn't in the book, but I allow it. It was so smart.
Did Judy Blume ever write a sequel to that book?
No. She wrote a book that she calls like a boy version of it. She never okay. did. I saw a good interview with her recently where someone asked her, like, did you like the Fudge? Because she wrote Fudge.
Super Fudge,
yeah. Super Fudge. She's like a Fudge TV show, and she's like, no, I fucking hate it.
Oh, really?
She didn't say fucking. But
I loved Super Fudge.
But, you know,
Fudge.
People have wanted to do this for a long time, and she always said no. And then the director of the...
it's Rachel McAdams is the mother, right?
Yeah, Rachel McAdams is incredible as the mother. It's directed by Kelly Freeman Craig, who did The Edge of 17, which I think is another really good...
another underrated movie.
It's a good young adult movie. Yeah. And she wrote a letter to Judy Blume, like kind of explaining, like, this is how I want to do it. And that's what made her do it. Allow it to be done.
Yeah. No, it looks really good. I really want to see it.
It is really good. And since then, Jen has been like, she's read like a bunch now. She's trying to read through all the Judy Blume books.
Has she read Tiger Eyes? I really like Tiger Eyes.
She might be reading that now. Oh, no, she's reading Blubber now, which is about the fat girl.
Okay.
Yeah.
Tiger Eyes was also adapted into a movie like 10 years ago with Kimberly from the original Pink Ranger. That actress is the mom.
Amy Jo Johnson.
Amy Jo Johnson, yeah.
Interesting. You should see the documentary they made about her.
Yeah, I really want to.
It's on...
what is it on?
I think it's on Prime.
Okay. Yeah, I got to check it out.
Yeah, and it's good because it interviews a lot of people. It interviews queer people. It interviews women. It interviews people of color. And they both celebrate her, but at sometimes they're a little hard on her. Like, you know, like some of the people...
There's
like,
not a lot of representation.
There's not a lot of representation. A lot of times the mothers don't have jobs and stuff like that.
Yeah, but it's also... It was a different time.
Yeah. But, you know, just her life story is interesting because she was like a housewife and hated it.
Yeah. I knew
and then
that.
Left.
Which is... Yeah.
I mean, she didn't leave her kids, but...
Yeah, she's a bad bitch.
Yeah. It's called Judy Blume Forever. Yeah, it's on Prime.
Forever was her most controversial book, I think.
That's the one where they have sex.
They have
right?
sex. Yeah. It's about losing your virginity.
She also wrote a couple adult novels. She wrote a book about herself and her marriage called Wifey.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I know she wrote, there was a book that like mom had called like Summer Sisters or something that was by her. It was an adult book.
Yeah.
So that's cool.
Yeah. Oh, I got Nebula, which is a, it's based, I mean, it is essentially a streaming service, but what it is, YouTube essayists who want to do more and not have to worry about YouTube and all that shit, they work here. So like it was $30 for the year.
Okay.
Which is like $2. Like, so I was like, okay, great. And do you know Lindsay Ellis?
No.
She's a YouTuber essayist. She did a lot of good essays. She also like writes sci-fi and stuff, but she got canceled for utter nonsense. She got canceled with something that I also said, which is she said the Disney movie Raya the Last Dragon felt very, very similar to the Avatar cartoon series. And when she said that, everyone was like, you're racist. And she made a whole video defending herself, but then also just like was like, fuck YouTube, and quit YouTube. And then kind of went away for like over a year. Because people don't realize that when everyone in the world turns on you on the internet, it gives you very bad PTSD. You can't imagine, like, you know how like you don't like a person disliking you?
Yeah.
You can't imagine what it does to you when the entire world bans against you and decides unilaterally that you are a bad person. Yeah. But out of nowhere, I saw advertised that she's back, but only on this thing Nebula. Okay. So I was like, I want to see the new Lindsay Ellis essays. I love video essays.
Yeah.
I mean, I love this podcast. I'll never stop doing this podcast. But if I had the time to do something else, I think I'd want to do video essays. And so she had, I watched. She had a good video essay on Guy Fieri, which is like, why do we don't like this? Why do we hate this guy? What does this guy do to us?
I don't know if we hate him. It's just like, he's kind of a joke.
You're right. But people also, he got this weird thing of like, people said he was homophobic, which there's no proof of.
It's just his vibe.
Yeah. And like, he also, like, his sister, who was his, like, the closest person was in the world, was gay, and she passed away, and now he, like, adopted her kid and raises her kid.
Yeah.
And he officiates gay weddings. Like, he's not homophobic.
Yeah. Like, but what's annoying is someone will hear all that and be like, that doesn't not make you homophobic.
Right.
Which is,
right.
I hate that too. Well, that's kind of like, I don't particularly love Chris Pratt either, because yeah. I think he's a little weird, but there is no proof that Chris Pratt is homophobic. That's another one where it's like, it's just based on vibes, man.
Well, like, the only proof, and this isn't really proof, it's association.
To a church that is
homophobic. Has done weird shit, yeah.
But like, not, that doesn't necessarily mean anything.
Right, no, I agree.
But I don't like him in general, because I just, vibes. I just feel like he's kind of a weirdly, he has a weirdly conservative vibe, and the fact that he's never denied it means that he is.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
Like, there was that video of him, like, being, like, really militant about his little kid, like, saluting the flag.
Yeah. And which, also, but again, but that's not a bad thing. It's just
no, liberals. It's not.
You get your cackles up.
It's not like, at all.
Because we think it might mean something else.
Yeah, right. And then I think more, like, the divorce from Anna Faris, it's like, I don't know, people tend to think, like, Anna Faris is so cool. So it's like, well, if it couldn't work for them, he's probably just a fuck.
No, she seems like a bit much.
I will say I really hate her episode of, her episode of, what's it called?
How Did This Get Made?
How Did This Get Made, which I really love because it's the Grease 2 episode, yeah. But she's horrible in it.
Yeah.
And, like, if you go on Reddit, they're like, I love this episode, but I hate her in it so much. Yeah. She's like high through the whole thing.
Yeah, she's got a weird vibe. Yeah. yeah. I saw Guardians of the Galaxy 3, and I just saw it because I'd seen the first two, and I've really given up on Marvel. I saw Black Panther because we just desperately wanted to go to a movie, and we're like, let's see Black Panther, and it was so boring.
The original Black Panther?
No, the new one.
Oh, Wakanda Forever?
That one.
But he's not in it, right?
It's so boring. So, and people wanted, what's her name, to win an Oscar.
Who?
Angela Bassett playing his mother.
Angela Bassett did the thing.
It's a good performance in a bad movie.
Is he dead in the movie?
Yes.
It's a bold choice.
Yeah, it's the only way. Yeah, and they make his little sister, like, she becomes the new Black Panther.
Yeah, okay.
But it was like, it had everything that, it did everything wrong that Marvel movies do. It was 1 million hours long. It wastes a lot of its precious story time setting up new characters for things that are going to come. It does all of that horrible Marvel
shit. Did it do poorly?
No, it did great.
What's the Marvel movie that did poorly where people
the third Ant-Man movie.
Finally, maybe this is Marvel's undoing.
Yeah, Quantumania.
They don't need to go away, but I'm happy that they had a flop, so at least they could maybe like...
They're wavering. They know, like, they've been trying in the last couple movies and TV shows to make another new big bad guy like Thanos.
Yeah.
And it's not working. And then that guy got accused of, like, physical assault on domestic assault. So now it's like, they're going to even keep pushing this guy as, like, the next big bad guy. But anyway, Guardians 3 was good because it's the last Marvel movie done by James Gunn, because he's going over now to be the head of the DC.
Whoa.
At
That's wild.
Right. He's the Zack Snyderverse is ending.
It's Reign of Terror.
The last one is the Flash movie that has Michael Keaton in it. As Batman. Which is
so weird. Wasn't Michael Keaton supposed to be in Batgirl?
Right, and that movie just did not come out.
That's so weird.
But now James Gunn is doing DC, so it was his last thing, so there's no what I call homework in it. There's no setting up new characters.
That's good.
There's no... It seems like... It feels like an 80s movie. Like, it says fuck. It's the first time anyone ever said fuck in a Marvel movie.
Really?
Yeah.
Didn't... There was no cursing in Iron Man?
No one says fuck. And you can say fuck once in a PG-13 movie, but they never did it. In this movie, they do it. A lot of people don't like it because there's animal cruelty in it, but I think...
There's animal cruelty depicted?
Depicted in it.
So that's the reason I don't like a movie?
It triggers people, and I get it. It's upsetting.
Is it
to
really
watch.
Upset? Is it really bad?
You don't see it, Rocket. He's a
oh.
You see, he's like a regular raccoon that like the bad guy like is like a Dr. Moreau. He like experiments with animals and turns them into like other creatures. So like you see him like basically like torturing Rocket, like pulling apart and putting him back together to make him who he is. But it makes him a great bad guy because you really hate the fucking bad guy. And it's been a while since like I saw a Marvel movie where it's like, I like the good guys. I hate the bad guy. Yeah. It's funny. People are talking like people. There's a story here. There are characters here. Not just
people. It feels
people
like a movie, like a...
It was like a movie. And I didn't like Guardians 2.
Me neither. I thought it was boring.
This one's good. It's good. And it has a bittersweet ending. It sort of ends like...
How's the music?
It's good, but it's no longer just 70s. It's got like later music. It's got like early 2000s.
Is it
music.
Still his mom's playlist?
Yeah. He still got the Zune. Yeah, it's good. I liked it a lot. You could tell it's the last one.
That's good. Hopefully.
You know, it's good. I enjoyed it. I think it's worth seeing. All right, let's take a break and come back with our obsessions. We're switching chairs.
Ooh, this looks... Ooh. This
yeah, you got me that for Christmas.
Yeah, I remember.
So, welcome back. We're doing obsessions. These are the pieces of media, pop culture that we are currently obsessed with. What is your current obsession?
Mine is a podcast.
A podcast?
A podcast. It's PCMC.
Yeah, right.
I think that this, so I said before, like sometimes I wonder like, is this my obsession or is this what I'm chilling with? But I think this is officially an obsession because I heard about it and then I immediately like listened to every episode and I was like, this is so good. I have to finish it. It is the Julia Louis-Dreyfus podcast.
Really?
Yes. Which Janine sent in the group chat. Like I don't know, she sent something with it, and she was like, "I'm hearing great things about this podcast."
You, by the way, you just revealed for the first time on air that we have a group chat.
She put in the other group chat.
Oh, the group chat I'm not in.
I have a group chat with her and our other friends. Yeah,
son of a bitch.
So yeah, but we do have a PCMC group chat, Bays and Chase.
Yeah, because it started as a
and just like that,
just like that
commentary,
and then talking about how much we hate the character Che, and then Jen named it Bays and Chase,
with a rainbow.
Yeah,
no. So it's I'm gonna say it right now.
Say it.
I
don't be afraid to say.
I love Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
I know you do.
I am such a huge Julia Louis-Dreyfus. I like her too. Fan. I think she is the Meryl Streep of television.
Wow.
I think she is television's best actress.
She's great.
I love her. And I love her as a person. And her son is on Sex Lives of College Girls. Her very attractive son.
Can you give me my drink?
Yeah. But anyway, so this podcast is called Wiser Than Me.
Okay.
And it's where she interviews old ladies.
Mm.
And then...
That's a great idea.
Like famous old ladies. And they talk about aging, and they talk, she asked them, like, she's a good interviewer. She asked them, like, what advice do you have? What's the best advice you ever got? How do you feel about aging? Whatever. Cause her whole thing is, you know how, like, nowadays in new podcasts, like in the trailer, they explain the concept.
Sure. Yeah.
So in the trailer, she says basically, like, you know, we as a culture kind of silence, ignore older women.
Right.
And it's about time we listen to, like, what these older women have to say. And so she has one. My favorite episode so far, there's only been, like, seven. I've listened to all of them. My favorite is her interviewing Fran Lebowitz.
Oh, yeah?
It's great because, I mean, we both love Fran Lebowitz, I think, right?
Yeah, but it's hard. It's kind of.
Why? What do you not like about her?
Well, her writing's terrible. Have you ever read anything she's written? It's awful.
No, but she jokes
about...
She's
a fun talker.
She's a fun talker.
People don't like her because she's a TERF. Which,
oh, see, I didn't know that.
Right.
That's upsetting.
She's a TERF. But I like her a little bit.
I take it back. I don't like
her. No, she's entertaining. Her ranting and raving is entertaining.
She's fun. Yeah. She's a funny, like, New York personality.
Right, right. But don't read anything she's written.
No. She also hasn't written anything in, like, forever.
Which is, like, cute.
The
but...
joke is, like, she says on a podcast, like, everybody tells my editor he has the easiest job in the world because she hasn't written anything since, like, the 80s.
Yeah.
But... So she has Fran Lebowitz. She interviewed Jane Fonda. She interviewed Darlene Love. She
I don't know who Darlene Love is.
The singer. She's known for, like, her Christmas songs, like Christmas Snow Coming Down.
No idea.
Christmas from Gremlins.
Okay, yeah.
that's where you know her from.
Yeah.
And then a few others, an upcoming, not yet released, but later on the season, she's going to be interviewing Carol Burnett, which I'm really excited
for.
That
sounds good.
Because I feel like Carol Burnett's a really hard interview to get.
Yeah.
She doesn't do a lot of interviews. And Rhea Perlman.
That's fun.
That's great. And I really like Julia Louis-Dreyfus. I like the concept. I also love hearing from older women.
Yeah.
And I like she's got a great format. So she's a great talker. She has a great voice. And she opens every episode with, like, an anecdote about herself.
Uh-huh.
That, like, somehow connects to her guest.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, when she's interviewing a chef, she'll talk about, like, her as a funny story about her cooking. Like, when she talks about Fran Lebowitz, she talks about, like, her relationship with New York throughout her life. And then she goes into the interview, and then every episode ends adorably with her calling her 89-year-old mother on the phone and telling her about the woman she's interviewed and her mother being like, oh, that's just fabulous, Julia. It's really sweet.
That's fun.
So I love it. I think it's great.
That's great. Is it everywhere, or is it, like, one of those pods that's in a specific
for right
place?
Now it's everywhere. Like, I get it on it's on Stitcher, and I think it's on Apple Podcasts.
What's it called again?
Wiser Than Me.
That sounds fun.
Yeah,
I like that. I like I like hearing from older people.
Yeah,
that's cool. I would want to hear the Carol Burnett episode too.
Yeah.
Did you never watched Better Call Saul, right?
No.
Neither did I, but you know she showed up in the last season of that as his mom?
Carol Burnett?
Yeah, like in, like, a serious role.
Wow.
And people said she was great in it.
I mean, I'm sure she was. She's great in general.
She's so good in Annie.
Oh my God, she's amazing.
Incredible. And playing against type at that point.
I know. She's iconic.
She's so good.
I mean, Kathy Bates.
She's the bitch you love to hate in that movie. Yeah,
Kathy Bates did it for ABC Family. And Kathy Bates is good, but, like, they cut out the drinking, which is the whole point.
Right.
Because it was ABC Family. Yeah, yeah. And I actually, I think we agreed on this. We actually both thought that Cameron Diaz was a pretty good Miss Hannigan.
She was good. She was not bad.
She was, like, a good, like, Gen X washed out Miss Hannigan.
Right. Didn't they make her in that movie like she was part of some, like,
she was part of, like, En Vogue or something. Or something ridiculous.
Or Sound Factory.
Sound Factory. Yeah. CNC or something.
Yeah.
But I really between Seinfeld, I think that Elaine has always been my favorite character on Seinfeld, and I feel like as the show ages, like, Elaine was so ahead of her time as, like, a progressive character on Seinfeld.
Yeah.
Like, feminist icon. And then Veep is just amazing, and she's so good on it. I've never seen New Adventures of Old Christine, but I heard that was good too.
And that had a little bit of a run.
Yeah,
she's really the most successful post person.
Yeah,
post Seinfeld person.
Yeah.
Even more than Seinfeld, really.
Yeah. Oh yeah, and I love her on Curb because she plays herself as a bitch.
Isn't she in, like, on the very first episode too?
She is. She's in the first season. She's in a lot of it, actually. But I love how she plays herself, because she plays herself as, like, very nasty.
Well, she plays herself as, like, not liking Larry.
Yeah,
very
yeah.
Much. So you recently watched all of The Sopranos?
Yes.
Have you seen the movie she did?
I should have mentioned that.
In your chilling?
In my chilling, yeah. Okay. So I didn't think of it because we just finished it last week.
Did you see the movie she did with James Gandolfini?
Oh, Someone to Eat Cheese With?
No. Enough Said.
Is that what it was called?
Someone to Eat Cheese With is... what's his name? From Goldberg's, the one who left Goldberg's.
Jeff Garland. And who?
Sarah Silverman.
Oh, God. How did I get those two confused?
I don't know.
Enough Said. No, I've never seen it. Is it good?
It's very good. It's a dramedy. Like, she's good in it, and he's very good in it. And I think it's actually one of the only things that he got to do before he died that really stretched him. Because he's really nothing like Tony in it.
Well, I was going to say, or it may also be one of the things he's ever done that's probably similar to him in real life.
Yeah.
Because in real life, he was well known for being like a pretty progressive, liberal kind of hippie guy.
Yeah. And like, he's really doing a voice nothing. For Tony. Like, he has nasal voice, but he doesn't talk like that at all.
In the episode of The Sopranos, I guess we can talk about Sopranos now because I just finished it. It was amazing. In the episode, I know it feels so trite, and that's why I don't even want to talk about it. Cause it's like, guys, have you seen this show?
Have you heard of The Sopranos?
late to the game by 20 years. But the episode where he has a dream where he's another man, where he's a normal guy,
has a normal Kevin, life. Yeah, whatever, yeah.
He's using his real voice.
Yeah,
and he's not doing the Tony Soprano.
Yeah.
And people think that that's him doing a voice. That's his voice.
Right.
Tony Soprano is a voice that he's putting on.
Right, exactly. Yeah. He was great.
He gave an anti-Bush speech back in the day.
Yeah. He also did like a little documentary where he like interviewed soldiers from Iraq. Like, he was very politically active.
Yeah, he was. And I know she was just in that movie You People, which I didn't see. I think she played Jonah Hill's mom.
I didn't see that either. My current obsession is Godzilla.
Okay.
Have you ever heard of it?
I have. I've heard of her.
So, I am going through all the Godzilla movies.
Wow.
There are, I believe, now 35.
Jesus.
I've watched, I believe, 15 or...
What? What year? In what year did the first ever one come
1954.
God, that's 35 movies in 70 years, I guess.
Well, like, the first one's in 54, the second one's in 55, the third one's in 63, the next one is 64. There's two in 64.
Is the original one black and white?
65, 66. The first two are in black and white. Look, the first one is the best one. Without a doubt. I think it's a stone cold classic. I think
you're, of course, talking about the 2000 Matthew Broderick one.
Yes. Of course. When I say the original.
Yeah. Are you going to watch that one?
Yeah. Well, that was the first one I ever saw.
Me too.
And I'll watch it when I get up to it in order.
The guy from the original is in that one in the beginning, right? As an old man.
Is
he the guy that dies? Who's like,
I don't remember. I don't know. I'd have to. When I rewatch it, I'll know.
By the way, that wasn't me doing an accent. His name was...
Cancel him.
His name was Gojira, wasn't it?
Yeah. No, yeah, yeah.
So the guy says Gojira as he's dying.
Yeah. Fans call him Goji.
Yeah.
His nickname is Goji.
That's adorable.
Gojira.
Yeah.
So yeah, the first one is brilliant. It's stark. It's moody.
What's
scary.
What's the plot? Like, what is it actually? Is he a monster? Is he a dinosaur? Where are we?
He's a mutated dinosaur that... nuclear weapons radiated and changed. Woke him up. I don't remember.
So he's a product of like Cold War anxiety.
The first movie it's 1954. So the first movie is entirely reflecting the pain that the Japan is still feeling from what happened.
Hiroshima.
Yeah. And Nagasaki.
Yeah.
So they get rid of this later on in the series, but in the first movie, even if he doesn't kill you, if you're near Godzilla, you get radiation poisoning. There's a very sad scene where, like, there's a bunch of people, like, in a shelter, and there's a bunch of kids, and they have, like, is it called a Geiger counter? Like, they've, like, have the thing in front of the kids, and it's going, like, they have radiation poisoning. Yeah. So that's the first movie is depressing and dour and dark, and I think scary in a very uncanny way. And the second one is still black and white, which works. But the thing that happens, and this is the thing that I think a lot of Americans know or make fun of, is as he gets more popular, he becomes a hero because he became like the, he was such, the Godzilla series was so huge in Japan and so many kids liked it that he becomes a hero. And then they weave in things like aliens. He has all, then he's got like his son, and it just gets more and more silly. Yeah, Ishiro Honda is the director of the first one, and then he actually directed a lot of the other ones, although he hated the direction that they forced him to go in.
Okay.
Because he wanted it to be serious and scary and sad. But from what I understand of the Japanese film industry at that time, it was almost like the American film industry was for actors. Like, you would be a director who worked for a company, and you really didn't choose what you got to direct.
Yeah.
So,
actors,
so
it was the same way, right? Like, it was the studio system.
So, like, he did a lot of the early, he did a good number of Godzilla movies before retiring, even like the sillier ones.
And now, so is there a direct through line between the first one and the most recent, like, Godzilla? Wasn't there a recent Godzilla vs. Kong?
Yeah. No, well,
the one that 11 was in?
Yeah, well, the new American ones are not related time-wise.
No, and they're not related to that 2000s.
No. Although they did, after the 2001 came out, they brought that one into the Japanese one.
Because that one is like a dinosaur.
Right.
A straight-up dinosaur.
Right.
And I don't think he breathes fire.
No, he doesn't breathe the atomic breath. Yeah, because everyone hated that movie. They brought him into the canon as a character, a different character named Zilla. Mm-hmm. And Godzilla just kills him in like 5 seconds. That's he like funny. Comes out of nowhere, and then the real Godzilla kills him.
That's funny.
But there is a sort of through line. I mean, it's loose, like, because some of them are in the future, some of them things change. The ones I've liked the most are the ones that people hate the most.
Okay.
Like, there's one that is really, really hated. Called All Monsters Attack, which is like an hour long, and people hate it because it uses mostly old footage, and it's about a little kid who is a fan of Godzilla, but Godzilla also exists in the world.
Okay.
Because as it goes on and he becomes a hero, everyone just knows about Godzilla and they love him. They root him on.
Okay. Even though he's constantly knocking down their buildings.
Well, what, a new monster will come and fuck shit up, and then Godzilla will come and kill him and save everyone.
Okay. So is he like the guardian of Japan?
He's the guardian of the world, yes.
Okay.
So this little kid is this like latchkey kid. His mom and dad are always working. And he like has Godzilla toys, and he loves Godzilla. And he has a bully at school. And he sleeps. And when he sleeps, he dreams of Godzilla. So all of the Godzilla scenes in the movie are this boy's dreams.
That's so weird.
But it's adorable, but it's
cute.
It sounds cute. It's really, I like it a lot. And then another one that people hate is called Godzilla versus Ghidorah from 1971. And this one's cool because they got a new young director in, and he was like, it's very hippie. It feels very like
hippie or like hippie.
Hip, no, hippie. Like it's got this like very, the monster's like a smog monster. It's like anti pollution. Okay. There's like weird animated sequences out of nowhere. It's very, very experimental and weird.
Yeah.
It's so different in tone from the other ones. And people don't like it because of that, but I love it.
That sounds fun.
And I say, like,
is Shen watching these with you?
No, or? God, no. God, yeah, no. And it's hard to tell because, like, one will be great, and I'll be like, this is great. And then the next one will be god awful. And then there'll be another great one, and I'll be like, okay, here we go. We're cooking with, grace now. And then there'll be, like, two bad ones, and I'll be like, oh, it's over. And then a good one will come out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And I'm only up to number 13.
Is there a canon of, like, which ones are considered part of the original series?
Yeah, up to, well, all right, so there's the Showa era, which they name it after the Emperor of Japan at the time, Showa.
Okay.
The Showa era is a lot of movies. That's like, let me see, it's about 15-ish movies.
Okay.
And that's where he's like really silly. He flies sometimes. Well, he flies once in a crazy way. He curls his tail up and he blows the thing out of his, he blows the atomic breath out of his mouth, and that makes him fly backwards.
That's amazing.
And then they were like, okay, that lost steam because, like, you know, you make 15 of them. So then they're like, okay, let's reboot it. And I think this might be the first instance of like that kind of reboot. So in 1984, Japan made a new one that was like, let's make him scary again, and let's not count any of the sequels. It's just we only count part one.
Okay.
Which is, I always thought that the first series of it was like Halloween H2O, but this is the '80s. So, and then from the '80s to the '90s to early 2000s, there were more Japanese ones with varying degrees of success and stuff. And then there's Shin Godzilla, which I think is the best Godzilla movie. That's the one that came out a couple years ago by the same person who did Neon Genesis Evangelion. And
Yes.
And
not really.
No, it's an interesting thing. Shin Godzilla is it came out 2016. It's the last Japanese one that they made. It's directed by Hideaki Anno, who like does these dark, weird animes, and Shinji Higuchi. And that's the one where like Godzilla's like tail has a face on it. It's very weird. But what's also interesting is it's part of a trilogy, the Shin trilogy, because they also made Shin Ultraman, and now they're coming out with Shin Kamen Rider, which in America was called Masked Rider. So what's interesting is those are three big properties in the genre of like what they call tokusatsu, which is like monsters and robots and stuff. It would be like what's interesting is it would be like, let's say after Christopher Nolan made Batman, he said, I'm actually doing a trilogy. My next movie is Back to the Future, and then my next movie that is Star Wars.
Okay.
And this, it's gonna be my trilogy, Christopher Nolan's Batman, Star Wars, and Back to the Future. Like, that's what makes the Shin trilogy very interesting. It's like this new artist who's well known, like getting to remake three huge things and call it a trilogy. Anyway, I'm working my way through it slowly, because sometimes it is painful. The last one I watched was, the last two I watched were fucking terrible. what the fuck? And they also get cheaper as time goes on. Oh, the last two I watched were Godzilla vs. Gigan and Godzilla vs. Megalon. And, oof.
You know Megalon. What a snooze.
Terrible. so yeah.
That's cool.
That's my current obsession.
That's fun. When do you think you'll be done with them? Like, how fast you burn through these guys?
I do maybe one a week, two
I feel
a
like,
week.
Yeah, I feel like, especially if it's a bad one, you're like, God, please, I don't want
to
watch
It's this. Weird because it's similar to the experience of binging a TV show, but also a TV show doesn't have a new cast and a new story every single episode.
Right.
So it's weird to watch a series that long. Although, a lot of actors play them different roles. Not in a American Horror Story way, but more in a, we have a very small film industry way.
Yeah.
The way like multiple people play multiple characters in
Doctor Who
stuff. Yeah. All right. That's my obsession.
Great.
We have very similar obsessions.
We do. Julie Louis-Dreyfus is going to interview Godzilla.
Did you see Godzilla versus
Godzilla is a woman of a certain age.
Godzilla's a man. I believe Godzilla in the American 2000s one's a woman, right? Or lays eggs.
She lays eggs.
Yeah.
I think that's the twist, is like they call it he, and then at the end they're like, he's a she. There's eggs all over she lays eggs in the New York City subway.
Yeah.
And then there's like a million baby Godzillas.
No, doesn't she lay eggs in Madison Square Garden?
Yes, but then there is a subway sequence.
Yeah, that movie's weird.
Yeah, it's a weird.
Also, Godzilla changes sizes a lot in that movie. Yes. Like, they never have a clear indication of how big Godzilla is. I remember
that was one of the big criticisms, was like, at one point he's like taller than the Empire State Building, but then he can like
fit inside
of the subway system. Yeah. Yeah.
All right, well, this has been PCMC. This was a fully for you. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Mike Bongiorno. I'm joined today by Anthony Bongiorno. Anthony, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
All right, we'll see you soon. We end our episode by saying,
go bye-bye.